A little idle chatter about the people that we know. And though it doesn't matter, is there a different way of saying hello?
You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe to this podcast, visit www.questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes Store.
Hey, good morning. This is Meg Riley here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and you've joined us for another episode of The View. Hey, Aisha, where are you today?
Hi, I'm here in Seattle, Washington.
Hi, I'm Tom Shade. I'm in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, which is actually having a first day of spring today, it seems like. It's actually nice and sunny and even a little bit warmer. So we're happy about that.
And hello, everybody. This is Terry Bernor. I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota. I will be behind the chalice most of the time running tech, and I will be live tweeting during this episode. So please join us. Use the hashtag TheView, V-U-U. Glad you're all here.
Today, we have our third of the three candidates running for UUA president this year, Allison Miller. And as I have been, I'm going to hand it over to Tom Shade to take the lead on this. I did want to start with a couple of comments. First of all, I want to throw out an apology to Jean Pupke that last week while she was here, I couldn't speak. And I'm sure it was distracting to have me writing my little questions on the side, coming in and out and otherwise messing around. So I apologize for that. Jean handled it very well, as Terry was joking that being on conference calls that don't work is a prerequisite skill for all of our candidates. I also just want to acknowledge what's very true for the online UU community right now, and that is that we are all from various positions and perspective wrestling with the eternal truth of the white supremacy of the UUA. And I just want to lift up my gratitude to VUE member Aisha Hauser for being the center of the storm in many ways. And just say that to me, it's a real gift when people of color speak up. It's not always a gift we would choose, we who are white, but I think we really do have an opportunity to take it as an expression of love, to listen carefully, and to look at the impact of our behavior. So I'm moved by all of the people who are responding positively, all of the ways that people are making this a learning moment. I know that there are webinars going on. Many people are choosing to focus on this in worship, that in their congregations, that the UUA board has made a commitment to look at this, that the UUA youth office did a really, deep conversation. So often the youth lead us. And so, I just want to name that's the context we work in. And before we go to Allison, see if either Tom or Aisha, if there's anything you want to say, and nothing is required to be said.
Am I unmuted? I just want to say, this is like, these things, they come up. They are inevitable part of our growth and our struggle. It sometimes seems frustrating that it seems like this question of like acknowledging our white supremacy, our white privilege, our racism is that we go over it over and over and over again. And it always seems like we're surprised that some people are resistant this time around when they weren't before, or it's an inevitable part of a very long, slow growth process. And it wouldn't happen if people like Aisha didn't raise hell once in a while. So God bless her. And but on the other hand, I mean, sometimes it seems like, what? Are we still talking about this? Are we still talking? Are there still people in our, when somebody says, we're the good guys, it's like, come on. Haven't we sorted that out yet? Didn't we sort that out like decades ago? But here we are again. Those signs that go, I can't believe I'm still having to protest this stuff. I don't know. It seems like I remember struggling with this stuff back in 1976 in Minneapolis, and yet I'm always surprised. I'm always surprised at the depth of my own resistance sometimes to these things. And, so God bless it. It's all happening.
Clearly struck a chord. I mean, there's hundreds of people who've been responding in a meaningful way. And a lot of people telling their stories, people of color who've been hurt. I heard yesterday the term weaponized whiteness by someone who was hurt by someone in Congregational Life staff. So we're not going to change anything unless we acknowledge it. And I think the difference now is it's being named, and I think in a much more authentic way. And we're asking for metrics. This is what needs to happen, because what set me off was going to two workshop conferences, the Black Lives of UU and Finding Our Way Home, a Religious Professionals of Color retreat. And it finally struck me, like, why is the UUA paying for this if all this effort is not going to result in people of color being in positions of power? And frankly, the responses have just been not helpful, to say the least. So thank you, Meg. Thank you, everybody. And I'm really grateful for everyone just stepping up and sharing their story, because if we can't do this in Unitarian Universalism, if we can't fix the faith of social justice, then I genuinely don't see how we're going to tell anyone in the world, including the current Republican regime, to do anything different. We got to practice doing it in our own house. So that's all I'll say.
Amen. I think the operative word is practice and practices. And I think I came across a great expression when I was in Bismarck lately. It was a pamphlet from the Indigenous People's Network. And it said, "Are you part of the Allied Industrial Complex?" And I thought, oh my God, that is sadly accurate of this, you know, this talk that isn't action, you know. And it's a very pointed pamphlet, actually. I've been looking at it a lot. With that, Allison, it's a time for leadership. You issued a statement about this. I think all the presidential candidates issued a statement about this, but I think that it brings today's conversation in at a particular moment. So, Tom, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, I'm just going to jump right on to that question, since I didn't see Allison's statement. So I'm going to just ask her to summarize what she said in that statement. What's up, Allison? What are you thinking?
Well, first of all, I actually feel very blessed to be here on this day in the middle of this critical conversation, because the next president absolutely is going to be involved in shaping how we move from this place. In my statement, one of the things that I lifted up was a real appreciation for Aisha and the leaders of color, many women of color primarily, who've really raise this to the consciousness of the denomination. And what I also mentioned is that this crisis existed before this staff hire. And I think that's really important, because as someone that's been a leader in our movement for a long time, I know that people have experienced this as a crisis in the past. And so it is a crisis, and it's not a new crisis. I think that's important for us to get, that it feels like a white privilege perspective to think of this as something new when people have been wrestling with this for a long time. I talked about my commitment actually to looking at the Leadership Council of the UUA and where voices, which voices are actually gaining access to the people who make the decisions about our Unitarian Universalist Association. And I think there's a glaring, when I'm president, if I'm elected president, one thing that just stares me in the face is that the Lifespan Faith Director, who's a woman of color, that position used to be part of the executive, the Leadership Council, and is not there. And so that's an obvious step that I would seek to change. We need to have the regional leads. I think it's very problematic what's been brought to light, to have all of the 5 regional leads and 9 out of 10 people who work with Peter as white people. It goes against what we say we stand for. And so we really need to change that. And we can change that. As someone reminded me, the NFL has actually changed the composition of their leadership to reflect the players that they're working with and serving. If the NFL can do it, the UUA can do it. and the other thing I talked about is that anti-racism trainings, identity caucusing, there was a time when our movement was deeply committed to the learning journey, the practice, I appreciate Meg's language, of cultivating anti-racist leaders at every level of the association. And it wasn't just a journey towards wholeness at the UUA. There was a network of leaders that were being developed across the association. And I know that I wouldn't be the leader that I am today in my community around anti-racism and immigrant justice and so many of the other opportunities or in the association over these last years if I had not had the benefit of those trainings. So we really need to redevelop the networks for those trainings. And it's such a shame because we know more about anti-racism training now and we're doing less of it. And the other thing I talked about is, and this it connects with people of color and it also connects in other ways. The UUA has dismantled leadership pipelines through some of its decisions. And so I think we really need to invest in leadership pipelines for communities of color. And especially I think about DRUM, Diverse Revolutionary UU Multicultural Ministries, Youth and Young Adults. There was a real commitment to investing in youth and young adults of color, who many of whom are now the leaders in our movement. So those were some of the things that I talked about.
This is a question that I've been asking everybody that when I've been talking to presidential candidates, and it's a general question, and you've spoken to it a little bit already in some particular. It's that you're seeking a position of authority and power. You'll have the authority to actually make personnel decisions mm-hmm. with the UUA. Mm-hmm. You'll have the authority to look somebody in the eye and ask them for $1 million. Mm-hmm. You'll have the authority to speak on all of our behalf in a public square, at a press conference, or even, God hopes, one day at a big speech at the Lincoln Memorial. Who knows? That authority comes with the office. And I want to know, and I think that people want to know on the broadest possible level, for what purposes do you seek that authority? And what do you plan to do with it? What's important in the authority that you see that this would be a great opportunity for you to have this authority?
I want to say that ours is a life-saving faith, and we hear those stories all the time. But I want to add something to that. Ours is a life-saving faith when we say yes to the risks that love demands. And so I think it's vital that our president live into their authority to embrace and empower the change that's needed for us to be relevant into the future. And so right now, I think there's a call for us to be and become and practice becoming a more multi-generational, multiracial, multicultural, and religiously plural faith. And the president needs to take a look at the Unitarian Universalist Association and people who are looking at that are working there, and then also the volunteers that are rising through the ranks, and pay attention to how we are being faithful to that vision in these times. And why? Because Unitarian Universalism is a faith that it's the song of many people's spirits, but they find themselves on the outside because of racism, because of white privilege, because of cultural barriers, class barriers, and generational misunderstandings. And so as president, and I'll just share, I was disappointed with the response out of the president's office, because I don't feel that our president claimed his power in the decision-making processes at the highest level of association, clearly a sphere of influence that he's engaged in. And so I'm paying close attention to that. I think it's important to acknowledge both that we have fallen short, that that this really has been a crisis for a very long time, and then to commit to making some hard strategic changes. That's what leadership requires, not just catering to our friends, not just catering to those in the inner circle, but really being faithful to the Unitarian Universalists, the 150,000 Unitarian Universalist adults, 50,000 children and youth in our congregations, and beyond. 1 million people want to be with us, but they bounce off for many reasons. We need to pay attention to why that is.
So you see that authority as being the authority to, you're looking for the authority to make concrete changes in structure You talked about leadership pipeline. You talked about the way the staff is, you know, the hiring decisions of the staff, which fall under your, you know, right. under your office, if not under your immediate.
Absolutely.
Absolutely responsibility, but you are accountable.
Yes.
To all of us and to the board to develop a multiracial, multigenerational, multi-religiously plural staff that can lead us into a different kind of future.
And actually, I'll just mention something only because of what you ended on there, that I believe I'm a lifelong Unitarian Universalist. And I also believe I would be the first president to have heritage outside of the Christian spectrum as well. And I think that's an important piece. The way that I've been talking about it, too, is that I think our most vibrant communities are ones where the work of faith and worship and spiritual practice are integrated with the work of empowering change in our institutions and congregations, and then the work of advancing justice in the world beyond. And so often we focus on one. We really need to be focusing on all three and how they work together. So changes that would be faithful to that vision of a healthy, vibrant Unitarian Universalism. And I'll give you one example of that, which is that currently we have one fantastic staff member who works 15 hours a week on worship at a time when we really need to develop multicultural, multigenerational, vibrant, multimedia worship resources. And we have 1,000 congregations and more. And that is just not adequate if we want to have vibrant congregations. And if we want to live into the multicultural, multiracial possibilities, our communion of saints is too white. Our congregations need to be furnished with new examples of inspiring words and opportunities.
Well, it is true that Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations produces 1,000 hours of worship every week. I mean, it's really an astonishing amount of production. That doesn't even include all the online worship that CLF is doing too, but just out of the congregations, 1,000 hours of worship, and it should have a bigger effect than what it is. I got a lot of questions about some of that, but I also want to ask this question that comes up about some of the, you know, we're really based on, you know, our whole legal structure, our whole formal structure is based on, we're an association of congregations building up through to the General Assembly and the board and the staff. But it seems that the most dynamic leadership in the UUA is coming from cross-congregational, trans-congregational groups like Blue, Black Lives of UU, and Drum, and Finding Our Way Home. And that's where the energy and excitement toward our vision is coming from. How would you see the staff relating to those kinds of organization and working with them to redefine what it is that we're doing and how we're doing it?
Well, this actually is so important. I'm my work with the CLF, as some people may know, that I've been on the board of the CLF for some time now. And one of the exciting things is that technology platforms really allow us to meet across the entire association, which is national, but also even globally. There's great possibility. And so there's been a real emergence of a strengthening of a possibility of people of color meeting throughout the year, and not only at Finding Our Way Home, and not only once a year, which I think is so critical. And so I think we need to, the Unitarian Universalist Association needs to pay attention. Finding Our Way Home, I believe, is now almost 100 religious professionals of color. That's a huge opportunity to reach out and find out what people's experiences are, what the obstacles are, and to really facilitate dialogues about how we move forward together. So I think there can be a function like an accountability group. And I, in my response, I actually talked about a community survey, which I think Blue and Drum, and really reaching out to the people of color in our association and finding out what their experiences are and actually creating steps in relationship to those, what we learn through that is really important. And I'd like to do that in the first 100 days. And I'm already speaking with different institutions that do this, that help an institution find the right questions and really create something that doesn't hang on a shelf, but really drives change forward. And it's not just people of color. I mean, right now the UUA is not leveraging the national networks of campus ministry like we once did. It's not leveraging national, I think there are many opportunities for us to look at trans-congregational efforts. The UU Legislative Ministry, I'm on the board there, that's a product of 23 congregations partnering with each other. Where is our national strategy for legislative ministries across the association? I think the UUA can play a convening role, can support the meetings of people across the association, and then be informed through those processes to really figure out where should we be investing our resources to move forward. But
can I just follow up?
Proactive, yeah.
One of the things that struck me, especially at the Blue convening, is it was not white centered. Our worship wasn't white centered. It was black centered. And so, right now we have a beautiful worship web that's still white centered online. So I would suggest to you and whichever president wins, to invest in POC centered worship opportunities and worship web, and that's fun. You know, that is supported by the association.
I think we should have our worship staff increased, as I said, and specifically, I think that it should be a multiracial staff. And we have 635 congregations that are 150 or less. So often it's lay leaders who are leading our worship. How are we modeling and equipping a diverse worship team that's training others at all levels of the association? So I agree with you completely, Aisha. I think that's actually critical. Not only the resources need to be diverse, but the model of who leads worship and who is empowered to shape that experience must also reflect that diversity.
Do you think we should be investing significant resources in creating new congregations instead of trying to reform our present congregations? That's probably a false choice, but where are you on the notion that in order to really develop non-white centered congregations, that maybe we should be investing in new ones rather than trying to put all our energy into reforming the ones we have?
So I've been thinking about this a lot. You talked about the president raising $1 million and asking for that. I worked at the Unitarian Universalist Association in the development department in fundraising and development. And one of the things we were doing was offering grants to congregations to reach out to younger populations. And some of the congregations today tell me that their demographics have actually changed because of those grants to this day. So I think it's twofold. Let me just say really clearly, it has been too long since we've been investing in growth. The Unitarian Universalist Association has been facilitating conversations about entrepreneurial ministry, but we've got to have our skin in the game. And to me, that looks like two things. Looking at congregations that have possibilities for multicultural, multiracial ministries and asking how we might be able to allocate resources to help support that growth from the center of that congregation, or perhaps that congregation is an anchor for a new project outside of the congregation nearby. And then we've been planting congregations in predominantly white communities and growing them for a very long time. I think someone asked me at GA, how would I feel about planting a congregation specifically in a Spanish-speaking neighborhood with a Spanish-speaking minister to work specifically with Latino Unitarian Universalists? I said, I feel great about that. We should absolutely be looking at the demographics of our country and how things are shifting, and where might we plant a new congregation in a community of color, and then have a plan to support it. This is critical. I just came from Tulsa, and there was a plant of a multiracial congregation, and the UUA only supported it for a couple of years. We need to have a longer-term vision of support if we really want to engage in this work. And let me just say this plainly. If we're not planning for growth, we're planning for decline, because our congregations wind up, I think, challenges around conflict avoidance plagues us at the level of the UUA and also even at congregational level. So because of conflict, congregations disappear, or because demographics shift, congregations disappear. We have a precious offering for the world. We must be investing and planting new opportunities, or again, we're planning for decline.
You're the person who's going to end up with a lot of fundraising responsibilities. The question I have is, do you think that a fundraising campaign dedicated to planting congregations in communities that are not, that have always been viewed as not traditionally good places for Unitarian Universalism in Black Spanish speaking or other communities, that a fundraising campaign for that would work? Do you think you could raise that kind of money?
Well, I just want to check, because I feel like you just said something in that question I disagree with. Traditionally not good communities for Unitarian Universalism. Because my congregation and the people that I meet in the community, the people I'm partnering with around immigration justice and Black Lives Matter in Morristown are so excited. Not all of them. I mean, everyone doesn't want to be a Unitarian Universalist. That'd be a boring world. But we are a vibrant part of the interfaith scene. And they're so excited, many of them show up on Sunday mornings. So I don't believe that narrative. I know and have met throughout my life as a Unitarian Universalist, people of color who are hungry for the messages, the theological diversity that we have, our belief in leading with love. That's my new way of saying standing on the side of love. That's not ableist. They long to be with us, but they come and they see a disconnect between who we say we are and how we practice. And so I don't believe that communities of color are bad places to plant. I think it's about it's the same story, right? Let me go with the story of immigration. Italian immigrants were Catholic, and then over time, the children of those Italian immigrants started to be exposed to the diversity of religious offerings in our country, and they started to have different longings for their faith, and some of them became Unitarian Universalist, I'm in New Jersey. That's a big part of my congregation. So similar things happen, of course, in the African-American community, in the Black immigrant community, in Latino immigrant communities. The question is, we need to change some of the ways we do things so that they're at home in a faith where they're theologically at home already.
I agree with that. That's not the question I was asking. The question I was asking was the reason why we don't continue to support, you know, congregations of color like Restoration in Tulsa, or even the Harlem Church back in the 20s.
With Ethel Red Brown, right?
Yeah, is because sooner or later some pencil pusher decides that we don't have the resources for that, and suddenly that becomes the most important question. And so the question is, can we, even in this time of budgetary cramping, do you think we could raise the money to extend, to plant Unitarian Universalist congregations where we have traditionally not planted them?
Okay, I appreciate it. So the answer I think is yes, and I think it's twofold. It's about both planting congregations and then also funding staff positions. Our congregations are like community centers these days. The Morristown Unitarian Fellowship is not the only one who shares our building. For example, Black Lives Matter shares our building. So what would it look like to fund something that could be in our building but is a totally different community? In Tulsa, for example, they have three extremely different style worships. So perhaps supporting a congregation and initiating something that serves new populations, that's a lower hanging, it's a less expensive model. I think we should be doing all of it. And we also have to realize that part of believing in entrepreneurial ministry means knowing that some things will fail and some things will succeed, and being willing to really invest and learn how to do this better and better. So yes, I think people will support this financially. And then the other thing I did answer in my last response to this question is that what I've learned from talking to folks is that the horizon of support was 2 or 3 years, and that really there needs to be a vision for a longer term learning and support in order to really be more mm-hmm. likely to be successful. So this mm-hmm. may also be a more long range plan instead of sort of investing in 10 places and saying, we're only going to be here with you for 2 years. choosing five places and having a longer horizon. And I think we have to, this gets to publicity as well. We publicized in Time Magazine and on NPR because that's where our folks are. We need to look at who are the folks who we think will feel connected and moved by Unitarian Universalism and advertise in new places. So investing in growth is not only about starting new communities, it's also about how we reach out and who we reach out to and who we are in effect saying is worthy of our time and resources. And people are excited, I think, to invest in things like this today.
Well, I have a budget question. I mean, you're talking about a lot of things you want to add, and I wonder if you see things that the UUA is doing that you think could be simplified, streamlined. You know, I don't want to make, I used to work there during these races. I don't want to make everyone scared they're going to lose their job, you know, but do you think that by restructuring the way things are done, more obviously more of this could be done, but are there places where you think maybe it's time we stop doing that?
So one of the things that I see happening at the Unitarian Universalist Association is a lot of times we'll start programs, and it's actually not disconnected to my recent comment. And then we learn about them, and they weren't perfect the first time. And I think of that, the perfect is the enemy of the good. And then we do away with it, and it disappears. I was part of a Dreaming Big program, or there was a Leap of Faith program, or a Threshold program, and they all disappear. So the question I have is, can we do, we don't do a great job of evaluation. How do we evaluate which are the programs that are actually penetrating into our congregations and making a palpable difference in terms of who we are becoming and want to become in the world? And I think that analysis is critical and doesn't happen enough. It seems like we do that analysis and then we abandon it. The anti-racism, there was complaints about the anti-racism leadership development experience. And so we abandoned it rather than integrate the learnings to move forward. So I actually think that there are some programs that we will find are not actually penetrating into the congregations and not making a difference or not serving Unitarian Universalists beyond our congregations. One thing I'll mention is that the focus of the Unitarian Universalist Association has been on internal shifts, the move and restructuring. And I definitely see shifting resources from the internal work to that external field work. To me, when I asked how a campus ministry gets started these days, a congregation has to already have the idea to do it and call the UUA in order to get help. That's not the way we should be allocating our resources. People should not be waiting for the phone call. There needs to be more allocation of resources that are connecting in the field. So growth looks like many different things. And so I would shift some of the budget that's going towards the center towards what really serves Unitarian Universalists. I think the UUA right now functions like a congregation. I have experience on the leadership team over the last 6 years on a $16 million nonprofit and really changing from serving donors to recruiting donors to serve the people in the field. And we've absolutely shifted how we've done things, and the organization is much more powerful and impactful today because of that. I see the same need at the Unitarian Universalist Association.
Can I ask one follow-up question,
sir? Sure.
So do you feel like that way that that organization shifted created more agility? Because I think one of the frustrations that I had inside the UUA and outside the UUA is the stunning lack of agility of the organization, which really isn't that big.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, I have been very excited to work not only with that organization, and I want people to know what it is, because it's kind of a traditionally sort of rear view mirror looking organization, United Way. And what they started, it actually started with an anti-racism and diversity committee, and then wound up driving change and a merger of six United Ways and being accountable to the communities that they want to serve. Everything has changed. And people are, we're actually, we're now doing legislative advocacy on behalf of the needs of poor people, and also what communities of color are saying they want in Northern New Jersey, which I won't get into the details because there's not time, but happy to talk with anyone about it. And the second thing is, I've been part of Unitarian Universalism adapting and experimenting for 20 years now. I was part of the first online project of an online church. And then I've been part of the leadership at the CLF as we've moved from a paper ministry to a really vibrant, multifaceted ministry that affects people around the globe. And in Morristown, sort of a heart of colonialism, if you will, we've really been changing the justice scene. So this is a part of my ministry. I feel called to institutional change work. And it's not always successful. And many times it is. But I'm excited to take what I've learned to the Unitarian Universalist Association and move that forward.
Allison, one of the things that I think has been frustrating for me where I sit is that there's been zero accountability. Once we went to regionalization, there were a lot of good words, a lot of great visions, and clearly there's a problem. So how do you see holding yourself and holding the association accountable in a meaningful way? What kind of metrics would you use? I'm interested in hearing your answer.
So a couple of things. I think that, again, that's where that evaluation piece comes in. And I talked about Drum and Blue as a kind of accountability group. And I think it is critical to, and I'm mindful that some of the surveys in the past have not worked because I think there's a question of trust amongst communities of color, even amongst youth who felt abandoned in the past. We've heard these words before. So why should we believe you this time? And so I think I know from the work that I've done here, it's going to be a process of rebuilding trust, actually agreeing upon what the goals are, and then also agreeing upon mechanisms of accountability from the get-go. And so I do see some metrics that I want to evaluate immediately. One of the things I think too is I've served so many different staff positions, and I think there's a danger of privileging one particular staff position over another sometimes in our association. And when I was on the administrative staff, I did a lot of database work. We really could set some benchmark goals for our congregations of things we want to track and could then easily mine that. These 150 congregations say they want to advance in racial justice within their walls. These 150 have said they've been working on that the last 5 years. How do we connect people? And then how do we track how people are doing against these benchmarks? And not just ministers, where are people of color able to really rise to the level of power on the board at the UUA in the key levels of staff positions at the UUA, but also across the association. And we can track these things. That's the beauty of a database. And then go back and have a covenant to go back and then to adapt and change the strategy by what we learn and not just abandon it when it didn't work the first time. I think that's critical. And I want to mention one other personal thing is that because I have the blessing of growing up in this faith, I have relationships with people of color who have also grown up in this faith and experienced some really challenging things. And so they call me up and call me on it. I think we need a president who has personal relationships with people who offer truth-telling, because once you're in power, sometimes your vision gets distorted. And so the president needs both personal relationships of accountability and then systemic relationships of accountability. And not just the president, all of the levels of leadership. It's important. I think the UUA itself needs to invest in anti-racism and white privilege training at the Unitarian Universalist Association.
You know, and I've been in this faith for most of my life, except for when I wasn't. The description, just if you look back over the years, is that we're always working on these things. We're always working on these things. We're working on growth. We're working on this. you know, every year the president comes out and tells the ministers we're working on this and we're working on this. And it's so hard to think about anything that was actually accomplished, right? To say, oh, you know, that's one of the reasons why I love the fact that we moved from 25 to 24 is that somebody said, we're going to do this. And then lo and behold, it happened. You go to Boston now, you go to a different building. And it's like you kind of go, well, that was not something they just worked on forever. They actually did it. And that's like a good thing to see once in a while. You always have that. There's a timeless quality to things in the UUA sometimes.
So, Tom, I have to jump in and say this. I think the reason that I was nominated by the Presidential Search Committee is because I have a demonstrated track record of actually saying things I'm going to be engaged in and doing them. You know, we, when I was a young person, we built up the campus ministry movement. It was much larger than today. We know a lot about how to be more successful than we are right now. As I said, launched the first online ministry project, which now this is all our congregations and institutions that network and build community online. I was told not to go to any congregation that had the word fellowship in its name by people because they didn't believe it was possible. Now I serve the congregation that's grown to be the largest it's ever been in its history. And we won a growth award at the district for that. When I launched the ministry that I was involved in at All Souls, I took a group of 5 young adults and built it to 250 young adults. At the UUA, I led the largest capital campaign for youth and young adult ministry to date. And I've been integrally involved in the building up of the UU legislative ministry of New Jersey, and all the while building a, you know, we opened a net, been part of the movement to open a worker center here in Morristown to engage in issues of race here, and actually have been part of a team that got ousted a mayor from office, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I humbly say that it's everything I've been involved in hasn't succeeded. Sometimes it's been a learning practice, but I have, 27 years of serving our faith as a leader in this movement and a really strong track record of growth. And I think it's because I believe in us and I believe in our capacity to change. And I truly do believe that we're a life-saving faith when we say yes, yes to the risks that love demands. And I plan on, not an ethereal timelessness quality, but rather some really clear goals about what we can get done. And I'm excited to get there.
I love to hear women talk about what they can do. Let me just say, I love that.
Let me ask you about this thing we call the resistance now.
And, okay.
Imagine, as you imagine yourself as the UUA president, which I'm sure is becoming a big part of your mind. What do you see as the role of the UUA president in this period of such heightened civic engagement? It's so aggressive and big, it's really working. And it's also filled with like all kinds of really interesting ferment within it about who leads and whose voices need to be brought to the front.
The roles of the president that I've been focusing on: spiritual leader, a public witness leader, the CEO of the staff leader, and the fundraising leader. Not the only one in any of these areas, but nonetheless, a key leader in all of those areas, and a partner with everyone else who leads in those areas. The part that you're asking me about, and the reason I shared those four, is that I see what we offer in terms of resistance, a resistance that's resilient, is that our practice, our spiritual practices, our theologies, our living into a story beyond our finite lives is what renews our spirit as we face time and again the problems of race. I think number 45 has been here before and may unfortunately come again. And so how do we enter into this legacy of oppression and have something to offer? So I think that being a strong spiritual movement of resistance, like I saw at Standing Rock when I showed up there, is critical to being in this for the long haul. And I think we have a lot to learn from Native Americans when we're talking about resistance over the long haul, especially in this country. I think that the president's social justice role is twofold. The president is engaged in interfaith relations at a national level with other religious communities. They're also engaged as a public voice for our cherished values and really a voice of a leading voice of public witness, supporting the work of Unitarian Universalists around the country and around the globe. And as CEO, I see another opportunity. The UUA has been investing in that public witness. I see another opportunity, which is how do we equip congregations and Unitarian Universalists for change over the long haul? What happens after the t-shirts and the banners go home? And how do we empower systems that are working on all fronts? Community, the change we've made in Morristown and that I see across the country that's been strong has involved community organizing, has involved public witness, yes, education, interfaith relations, fundraising, and many, many different legislative advocacy. And actually, we just launched the first legal advocacy project because some of these things are won through the courts. So as CEO, I think there has not been a vision for how the UUA, and there has been a vision in the past, but recently there has not been a vision for how UUA can equip congregations through staff and through trainings to be engaged in holistic social justice ministry. So I pair that. The public witness role of the president as a voice, as a spiritual leader for our values, and strengthening the spiritual lives and the social justice holistic possibilities in our congregations.
So I'm interested in this as a spiritual leader question.
Okay.
Imagining yourself in front of 1,000 people who are really wrestling with what they ought to be doing in this social order right now. You have the task to explain to them the essential spiritual message, belief, system, attitude, however you want to frame it, that is going to stand them in good stead no matter what happens in the next 3 years. What would you say to them? What's the saving message of Unitarian Universalism that you would want people who have never heard of us before to know, not about Unitarian Universalism, but about themselves and about the world, that they need to know in order to be happy, healthy, productive, and make a positive impact in the world from where they are? What's that message?
So I think about two things. Number one, I think we are the people who refused, the theological people who refused the idea that there was a group that was worthy of being saved and a group that was essentially condemned. And that universalist vision that we really live into of the beloved community. A parable that I often lean on in this is that vision of the story, and I encourage people to look it up, of the people, the difference between heaven and hell, where people have 3 foot long utensils, spoons, splinted to their arms. And in hell, they're starving because they can reach the food, but they can never feed themselves. But in heaven, everyone is well fed and content, like a coffee hour on Sunday morning. And it's because they're feeding their neighbors in front and behind them. And many of us have heard that story. But I've been focusing on this woman who asks the question about the difference between heaven and hell. And when the monks offer to show her the difference, and they say, "We will take you to hell," she says, "Yes, I will go." And that's where I see us in the story. That we have the courage not only to declare a vision that all are included, and not to stay in the safety of heaven, if you will, quote unquote, but rather to move towards trouble and to bring that vision of wholeness and to allow us to glimpse that wholeness even in the depths of despair and suffering and oppression until all are fed and all are included. And I think that is so important for us. We can't just talk about the beloved community. What does the practice look like of creating that kingdom on earth that includes all? So for me, that's a that's that's a grounding vision. And I think as Unitarian Universalists, it's about actually inviting others to share what their vision is. How does the song of Unitarian Universalism live in your heart and in your practice in the world? And I think right now in these times, the resistance looks like being willing to be uncomfortable, as I said, to step towards trouble and to hell. And I'm going to use a simple story from the other night, just the night before last. I was at a community meeting where the Tea Party was there and had invited our new sheriff for the county, who's talking about 287G again, which was a problem here in the past. And someone who was talking about how, called a Just Facts organization, but it was really Just Facts That Reinforce White Supremacy organization, about how immigrants were, I don't want to share their narrative. So long story short, there was a community of color that Black Lives Matter, Wind of the Spirit, that organized resistance to this event. And we went and were asked to asked certain questions, and we were a peaceful opposition. People were praying around the building. Now, at the end, there was a demonstration where people raised their arms and countered the narrative, passionate, out loud, angry in that room. And I raised my arm alongside of them. And there were people in the room, white people in the room, who came over to me and said, don't do that, don't do that. They're hurting their cause. And I turned to them and said, this is something that I've learned. That this is, for the person standing decades, they were someone who's in their, about 40, decades of pain and oppression in their life. And centuries of a trauma, a generational trauma. And it is not appropriate for us to say, do this quietly. Do this quietly. We have to keep moving until people feel the crisis. As I said, the crisis didn't happen with this new hire. The crisis existed before. So I think we need a leader of this association who is actually engaged in the resistance enough to understand that it's going to look different in different communities, and how are we going to support that? And that I, as a white person, cannot determine all of the tactics of the resistance. I have to be willing to both lead and be led. And actually choosing who to follow is a big piece of leadership today. So these are some of the things that I think we need I'm not in hell. And so when I'm in hell, I have to ask the people in hell about their experience. I can't determine for them what the future is. I need to co-create a future with them and follow as well as lead.
Last couple of questions I've been asking everybody. We got 3 minutes left. What has been the most disappointing experience of running for president, and what has been the most pleasantly surprising?
I'll try to be very short. I think the disappointing part of running for president is the realization that sexism is alive and well in the Unitarian Universalist world, even with 3 women running for president. I don't have the time to get into all the ways that manifests, but as I've often said, it really is leadership at all levels. I think it's a wonderful thing that we're going to have our first woman president, but as we learned from people of color being president in our association, that doesn't eradicate those oppressions, either the individual oppressions or the linkages around those oppressions. So that would be my short answer. And then the delight has been how open people have been with their stories of pain and struggle, and how powerful it is to be entrusted with those stories. And also how people have entrusted me with incredible stories of hope, and how their congregation has, or their UU community has really saved their lives. And the deep gratitude, and that's certainly part of my story, the deep gratitude that they have for this faith. And that that when someone's running for president, I think that there's a potential distance that's created. And I've been so grateful that people have spoken so deeply and fully from their heart. And so that's been, a blessing that I expect to continue over the next many years.
Well, thank you for sharing this time with us, Allison.
Thank you so much. This concludes our three-part presidential candidate series. Next week, Michael Crumpler will be here. He is the new director of the LGBTQ office. He'll be talking about integrating faith and queerness into one body. I just want to mention, I'm going to be on sabbatical the next 2 months, so you'll see me again in June. I'm excited about what'll happen. I might sneak into the watching side of this because there's some good shows coming up and great hosts to carry it on. So carry on. And Tom, thanks for taking the lead on all of these forums with the presidential candidates.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Done that.
All right. Careful out there, everybody.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.